Hi, this is my favourite Elliott Smith song. In this podcast, we try, in our own very small way, to keep Elliott Smith's legacy alive by speaking to well-known fans about their favourite song of his. So thanks very much for joining us for this episode, the ninth in our second season. Our guest today is Slim Moon, the founder of Kill Rock Stars, the record label that put out two Elliott Smith albums. First, there was the self-titled record in 1995. That was then followed by Either Or in 1997. I should also say, though, that before they put out either of those, the first time Elliott worked with Kill Rock Stars was on the single for Needle in the Hay, which came out in January 95. Now, I'm pretty excited about this interview because I've been trying to get in touch with Slim for basically as long as I've been doing this podcast, which is about 2 years now. And I think I'd abandoned all hope of speaking to him back in about May 2018. But then a few weeks ago, I woke up to an email from Slim saying he was up for it, and I was absolutely ecstatic. So hopefully you'll enjoy this chat with Slim as much as I did speaking to him. As you can imagine, he's got lots of incredible stories as well as fascinating insight on his selection for his favourite song. So here he is then. Here's Slim Moon, the founder of Kill Rock Stars.
My favourite Elliott Smith song is definitely Last Call.
Last call, he was sick of it all, asleep at home.
A lot of times for anybody, favorites are about, like, for personal reasons. They're not necessarily like the objectively best song, but instead a song that is evocative for you for a mixture of the quality of the song and the memories or when you first heard it or, you know, what time in your life you listened to it or whatever. So for me, it's, you know, really the song that he was playing when I went from thinking, oh yeah, a guy with a guitar who my friends like, to, oh my God, that I really need to pay attention.
Told you all and goodbye. Oh, you know, one day you'll come to haunt you, that you didn't tell him quite the truth.
I'm kind of a traditionalist in terms of song structure. So a song like usually has, you know, a verse, a chorus, and a bridge. And the bridge usually changes the meaning of the song. Like without the bridge, it means one thing. And once the bridge happened, then you like, you know more. And the next verse packs a bigger impact. And I feel like, okay, so first thing is it has that classic structure completely. Second thing is it's really catchy. Third thing is it's really, really, really emotionally evocative. It really packs a punch. Clearly, he's a writer that is really paying attention to the internal sounds, not just, you know, does the end of the line rhyme, not just the meter, but when you're going one level deeper in writing poetry or lyrics, you also are paying attention to the internal sounds within lines or from line to line, not just the rhyme scheme or the meter. And I think the metaphors are really good. They're just sort of the right amount of mystery or ambiguity and the right amount of familiarity. Like, yes, I know that. I've felt that. I've been there. And then I just love how he changes the tuning, and it's like the end of the song is like a whole different song. And that's just, it's always a risk in songwriting to have, you know, an intro or an outro that's totally different from the rest of the song, or a bridge that has a key shift or anything. But in that case, that the end of the song is just super powerful. And I really felt like that takes that song over the top.
A tongueless talker, you don't care what you say, you're a jaywalker. Just walk away, and that's all you do. The clap of the fading out sound of your shoes.
Watching him play Last Call was really cool because he would change the tuning like right there in front of you, you know? Like he'd get to the end and then reach over and drop the E to a D and then play it out. And I'd only seen metal bands do that before. I'd never seen a guy playing an acoustic guitar change the tuning mid-song, you know? And that was just pretty cool to me.
The phrase last call, how do you think he's using it in the song?
Well, I'm not as comfortable trying to decipher meanings. But, you know, first and foremost, last call is, you know, what they say at a bar when it's time to get, when they're going to be closing soon and it's time to get a drink. But with a songwriter, I mean, it's time to get your last drink if you want one, because they're going to cut you, you know, they're going to cut you off and then a while later kick you out. But with Elliot, I think every double meaning is intended. You know, I think the ambiguity is welcomed. So it could be, you know, the end of the day, a last call to someone, or the end of a relationship, a last call. And I think that kind of ambiguity is there in the song.
We actually, in our most recent episode, covered the song Roman Candle. I feel like this song has a kind of a nice, I don't know if symmetry is the right word, but they sort of fit together in a way. Does that stick out to you?
Yeah, you know, I founded the record label Kill Rock Stars, and then I stepped away for 12 years, but I just became the president again. I'm now running it again. And we are, like, one of our current efforts that I'm coming into in the middle is a reissue of his second album, the self-titled eponymous record. And so I've been, because we're working with that right now, I've been like rereading the lyrics and listening to the songs and really be living in it again after all these years. Within each of those two records and then together between the two, it feels like there's some themes and imagery that keep coming up, you know, that it's pretty easy to presume had to do with some things that were going on in his life. I never had conversations with Elliot about, like, who's this song about, or we had conversations about how he wrote songs. You know, he told me that he liked to watch TV with the sound off and just strum and strum and strum until something came to him. But we never had any conversations about who songs were about or what situations songs were about. I've always kind of approached my relationship with artists as their label guy, in a way where I make it clear that I'm a fan, but I don't go all the way to fandom. Like, I don't pester them with all of the questions that a fan might ask. But I do feel like there's a lot of something that sort of seems like a love triangle on those two records. And there's some drug imagery, particularly on self-titled. And there's some, all of a sudden I forgot what the third thing is, but I think there's three things in particular. Oh yeah, there's a lot of Portland imagery in both records, especially on the self-titled record. And so it's almost like he's telling us parts of a story that has to do with Portland, but also travel to a couple of, you know, people leaving, people coming. And, you know, there's that sense of loneliness and emptiness and loss, but it's very particular to the stories. But I think there's a lot, you know, there's still so much ambiguity. There's a lot of space to guess or to fill in what we think it, how it goes down. And I think more than speculating the story, I think that space creates space for it to be personally meaningful to every listener with their own experiences and life stories and emotional moments. Trying to crawl under my skin when I already shed my best defense. It comes out all around that you want, and I think I'm all done. You can switch me off safely.
As well as releasing the self-titled album, you, of course, also released Either Or. What ways do you think Either Or and the self-titled album are different?
Well, you know, the obvious one is that there's a lot more instrumentation on Either Or. There's bass and drums on a lot of the tracks. Although there's some the doubling of the vocal, it feels less raw on Either Or than it does on the first two records. I think he leaves fewer sort of guitar mistakes on either R. Like, it's just a little more produced, although still very lo-fi compared to major label slick records. And I think either R has moved on to not telling the same stories. I think this is just my feeling, but I feel like Roman Candle and the self-titled record are more of a piece and really coming out of probably out of some experience or set of experiences that he had. And I feel like either R, he kind of moved on from some of that, although the Portland imagery still is there in either one.
Do you have a preferred album out of those two?
Yeah, as a fan, I prefer the self-titled record because although I like a lot of things, you know, and in many ways Led Zeppelin is my favorite band, my really sweet spot for my own personal taste is when somebody can write a song and perform that song entirely on their own with just one instrument and be grade A, as powerful and affecting as music can be. And I think it takes a great talent. You know, most solo artists still like dress it up with a band or do a lot of studio production. And, you know, Elliot did some doubling of guitar or doubling of vocals, but those songs were so powerful, just him and a guitar, you know, on stage. And there's very few people who I find as emotionally affecting completely solo as that record and those songs. So I think the songs on either are just as good, but I was a little sad that he added instrumentation because, I don't know, in my sort of like internal system of merit, I give greater credence to a powerful solo song than a powerful song of a small combo. But I have mixed feelings because, of course, either or was more, you know, so-called accessible. The additional instrumentation meant that it got some play on the radio, meant that it could fit it in better on movie soundtracks, and just, you know, meant that people could dance to it or sway to it or feel it in their bones or whatever. And therefore, that record connected with people a lot more than the first two records had. I'd say connected with more people. Just wanna continue. It'll all be yesteryear soon. Start to drink. Just wanna continue. It'll all be yesteryear soon.
And then after either or, your relationship with Elliot kind of fell apart a bit. Is that right?
Like, we had a final conversation where we agreed that we weren't going to be in contact, like, as friends. But we didn't, the relationship didn't, we still respected each other. And he didn't, like, want to take the records away from Kill Rock Stars. And I didn't want to, like, drop them. You know, he was happy. He was fine, as far as I know, with keeping the records on the label. We continued to stay in contact in terms of anything business related. But on a personal level, we took a step back. I was concerned about his self-care, and I let him know that. And then I told him that I knew people who I felt like he was on a similar trajectory to other people I knew who had had unhappy stories, and that it had really hurt me emotionally to watch that play out from up close. And so I told him that I just needed distance to protect my own feelings. And, you know, I have a lot of, I mean, I don't know if everybody in the world as they get older is filled with a ton of regrets, but I feel like it's pretty normal to have a lot of regrets. Like, there's lots of things I did in my life that I would do again the same. And then there's lots of things that I learned differently, or the way it went didn't go the way I thought. And so you can file that on all under regret. Like, I think regret is inevitable, but you can file that under regret. If I could go back and do it again, I would have handled that differently. When I've had situations like that before, since then, where I'm concerned about somebody, how somebody is treating themselves, I now, if I feel like I need that emotional protection, that distance, I just make a little distance, but I don't cut off communication with people anymore. And the Elliot situation was one of the times that one of the times in my life that has helped me come to a different conclusion, to come to the conclusion that it's not good to cut off communication.
Church bells, now I'm awake and I guess it must be some kind of holiday. I can't seem to join in this celebration.
You mentioned it was a regret that he was kind of completely cut off from communication. Was that a regret that you had while he was still alive, or was it something that that you came to later?
I changed my feeling about it while he was still alive. In the final year of his life, he had a fairly new lawyer, and I got in contact with that lawyer, and we had decided to meet and talk, and we had a date to meet and talk at All Tomorrow's Parties LA that was happening that year. So it was coming up. He was scheduled to play, and I was going to fly down to LA, and we were going to meet, and it was going to be sort of arranged by his lawyer, who I had had sushi with a little before that, the last time I was in LA. And so I was looking forward to ending the not talking when unfortunately he died. So I've never wanted to like make up that like some sort of personal tragedy. Like I didn't. Yes, it sucks that I didn't get to talk to him one last time, but his death is so much more sucky than my own personal loss of not getting to talk to him one last time that I've never really brought that up before.
What was it like being so closely involved in the rise of Elliott Smith's career with the release of both the self-titled album and also Either Or?
Well, it was fun, you know. I mean, like that's what as a record label you want to be involved in those situations, you know. In varying ways, we've been involved with a few different bands who kind of took off, and it's always really, really gratifying, you know, because you believe in the artist from the beginning, and it's gratifying even to your ego to when a whole bunch of other people agree, and the thing you believed in when it was small catches on and becomes big. But it's also gratifying because it means more money is going to come in. That means you can sign more artists and put out more records. And then you're really, you know, I loved him. He was a great guy. Mm-hmm. So you're really happy for him that he's, you presume when people are writing these songs and putting it out on and going from one record label to a bigger record label to a bigger record label, that they're trying to reach a big audience. So when it does reach that big audience, you're happy for them because you're like, yeah, you proved it. You got what you wanted. You're getting there on merit.
So thank you very much to Slim Moon for taking the time to speak to us and for being so honest and open about his friendship with Elliott and the time they spent working together. With Slim in mind, for our listener pick this week, we obviously had to keep things Kill Rock Stars related. So here's Kellen Stover from Austin, Texas, talking about a song from the self-titled record.
Like any Elliott Smith fan, my favorite song is just always changing. Right now, it's probably St. Ide's Heaven. One of my current favorite things to do is to walk around everywhere that I can in my city since I live downtown. Like in the song, it can be a good way to sort of escape, maybe get some introspection, you know, or even stew about, you know, your current life issues. I can't say that I've done it on amphetamines, but I have had plenty of boozy strolls home. Elliott makes a lot of moon references and imagery in his songs, and I think this song has one of my favorite examples. The lines are, "The moon is a light bulb breaking. It'll go around with anyone, but it won't come down for anyone." And lyrically, I just love that. I think most striking in the song are the female vocal harmonies that are throughout the entirety of it. I did my research before recording this, and I found that a Rebecca Gates is credited for them, and all praise to her because I think they're just beautiful, and they go so well with Elliott's voice on this song. Anyway, Elliott will always be my favorite. He's going to always be my biggest musical influence, and I just miss him a ton. And I thank you for this podcast because it's, you know, allowed me to connect and, you know, feel a little bit more involved and connected with a bunch of people that, you know, like a master's work. So thanks a lot. And thanks for this opportunity.
Thanks to Kellen for sending his pick for his favorite Elliott Smith song to us. And if you want to be featured in the show, then please do feel free to send us a voice note telling us what your favorite Elliott Smith song is to info@myfavoriteelliottsmithsong.com. That's pretty much it for this episode. Thanks to our guests today, to Slim Moon and to Kellen Stover. And thanks to Elizabeth Wood-Stanley for producing this podcast with me. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time when we'll be joined by musician, writer and fellow podcaster John Roderick. So hopefully you can join us for that one. Lastly, thank you very much for listening to this podcast. See you again next time.